This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's good to have you with us today. 5 days ago, Devin Kelly walked into the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, and murdered 26 people with an AR-15-style military rifle. As officials try to figure out why, the Air Force now admits that a lapse in protocol made it easier for Kelly to buy that gun, a gun that legally he should not have owned. On Tuesday, Defense Secretary James Mattis spoke.
First, I have to define what the problem is. If the problem is we didn't put something out, we'll correct that. There is at least an indication in what I'm reading in the press and what I'm getting from other elements of the government, not DOD, that in fact the direction is out there. But I've got to make sure. I don't want to make assumptions right now. I'll find out what's the problem.
A very careful Defense Secretary James Mattis there. While in the background, the Defense Department Inspector General investigates the Air Force. In 2012, Kelly was court-martialed for domestic violence against his wife and stepson while serving in the Air Force, and under the law, should have then been barred from purchasing firearms and body armor, both of which were used in Sunday's attack. Now investigators want to know how Kelly was able to walk into a San Antonio sporting goods store in 2016 and buy his AR-15, and whether someone failed to enter Kelly and his military criminal record into the FBI's criminal background check database. The Air Force has admitted errors here. Here's Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson on CBS.
We're doing a full review of this case and others like it to ensure we're going through all of our databases to make sure that this wasn't the only case where this wasn't done.
We have someone with us now who might understand just why the Air Force missed Devin Kelly. Jeffrey Korn served in the U.S. Army for 21 years and left the service as a lieutenant colonel. He's now professor of law at South Texas College of Law in Houston. Professor Korn, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Describe the lapse here as far as we know. What does it appear that the Air Force was supposed to have done in Devin Kelly's case, and what did they do instead?
Well, it appears what they are supposed to have done is to file a fingerprint card with the FBI that would be then uploaded into the National Criminal Information System. That FBI card would have indicated the offenses that Kelly had been convicted of and the sentence that had been issued, which in turn would have triggered the prohibition on selling a weapon to him if that record had been checked during the sale.
That should have meant that if Devin Kelly went into a store to buy a gun dealer or a department store, that NCIS background check would have pinged and by law, no gun.
That's what should have happened, because while there's a lot of discussion about the fact that it was a crime of domestic violence, there is another disqualifying element that it fell under, which is the fact that he was convicted for an offense that has an authorized punishment of more than 1 year confinement. And the way the statute reads, there's not a requirement that he receive more than 1 year confinement. The fact that it was an authorized punishment of more than 1 year would have also disqualified him.
So that's what the Air Force should have done. What do we know about what they did?
Well, I don't think we do know, and I'm sure that the Air Force is as frustrated and probably embarrassed over this as anybody and regrets it deeply. I think what we're going to find out in the ultimate outcome of the Inspector General's investigation, and if the Senate does any hearings, is that the problem here is what a military commander would call a lack of unity of command or unity of effort. There are regulations and instructions in place that require this reporting, but from what I've been able to tell, the problem is there's no clear indication of who has primary responsibility for making sure it happened. So I think what we're going to find out is that this fell between the seams of different areas of responsibility between the JAG officers and the JAG office, the security police office, and perhaps even the Navy prison where Kelly was confined.
Lack of unity of command, all these different offices doing different things, and maybe nobody on the case here, Professor Korn. Do you also suspect that there may be a cultural aspect to this, that maybe the military just isn't that turned on to the idea of barring people from having guns, so this just isn't a priority?
I absolutely reject that assertion, and I've heard that periodically in some of the reporting. I just don't think it's credible. Let me give you an example. The federal statute that prohibits an individual convicted of a crime of domestic violence at the misdemeanor level indicates that anybody who's convicted of a misdemeanor of domestic violence should be in the system. The military doesn't classify offenses as misdemeanors or felonies. However, in order to maximize the probability that these reports will be submitted when appropriate, the Air Force JAG manual, the instruction on military justice, actually indicates that any conviction by any special or general court-martial involving conduct that amounts to domestic violence should be indicated on the what's called the promulgating orders or the court-martial order that is the result of the trial. And it goes so far as to put the instruction to the JAG office in terms of the type of font they should use, and it should be stamped in bold letters across the front of the order. And I think this is, you'd find this in other areas of military regulations. I don't think it's a lack of desire. I certainly don't think it's an issue of any type of malice or an effort to avoid the obligation. I really just believe it is a consequence of too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak.
So there's been another issue, Professor Korn, that I think has been confusing to a lot of people in the aftermath here. Exactly who in the military who commits a crime or gets a sentence can be barred from purchasing guns later?
Well, the military is subject to the federal statute. So the answer is derived from the federal statute that applies to everybody else. And it would be any person who is convicted by a court-martial for any offense with a maximum penalty authorized of more than a year, which is a lot of offenses under the military code. It would be any individual who was convicted by a court-martial and received as part of the sentence a dishonorable discharge. For example, Bo Bergdahl now would be prohibited from purchasing or owning a firearm under the federal statute. And it would be any person who would fall under what's known as the Lautenberg Amendment, which is the provision of the statute that was added that says you've been convicted of a misdemeanor involving domestic violence. And again, the military appears to interpret that fairly broadly if you're convicted by a special or general court-martial.
So, Professor Korn, you spent a lot of time in the U.S. military. I know not in the Air Force. You were in the Army. Can you give me a sense of what some of the people in the command structure, given the lapse that apparently happened here and the tragedy in Texas, how they're probably feeling about this error, about what you call a failure of unity of command?
I think they're probably feeling frustrated and embarrassed to a certain extent, but most importantly, deeply concerned that what they want to be doing and what they assume has been done may not have been done consistent with what the statutory requirement is at the federal level. And I think there's going to be a very quick determination to figure out why and improve the system. If I were a betting man, I think what we're going to see probably pretty soon would be some Secretary of Defense level directive that appoints what we call an executive agent. So either at the DOD level or at the service levels, it will be a very clear statement of who has primary responsibility for making sure this data is uploaded. And another interesting piece of this is the military confinement facility level, because only the Navy and the Army run military prisons, and every service member who's convicted by a court-martial and sentenced to prison will go to one of those facilities. They're sprinkled throughout the United States and around the world. Military police regulation has a provision that requires the provision to send another fingerprint card with the sentence data to the FBI when the service member arrives at the prison and is in process. Interestingly, the Navy regulation requires the prison to take the fingerprint card, but actually says don't send it to the FBI because we assume that that's a law enforcement function. And I suspect some type of redundant reporting requirement now is going to be looked at very carefully and probably implemented.
Professor Korn, you know, if this directive does come from the Secretary of Defense or somewhere else, look, you and I both know how politicized the issue of guns is in this country. There's no doubt about it. If the military starts to revamp or crack down on how they report this information, are you worried that outside politics is going to rain down on the Pentagon about who can have a gun and who can't?
Well, look, I think there's always a risk that politics will be an element or what might call background noise when the military is trying to resolve a problem like this. We saw this a couple of years ago when the issue of concealed carry came up after the Nidal Hassan shooting at Fort Hood, and some politicians were frustrated that military commanders had regulations that prohibited service members from carrying concealed weapons on base. But I think ultimately this is a very different issue because the military has no interest in shielding or protecting service members whose misconduct is so significant that it results in a court-martial conviction and a sentence to confinement, even a short period of confinement, not to mention a sentence of a punitive discharge. So I don't think there's going to be any interest in the military of being concerned that this is unfair to service members who've been convicted by a court-martial. I think it's the exact opposite. I think in most cases, those service members, because of the conviction, are going to be on their way out of military service, and the military is going to want to make sure that it gets the data into the system so that their misconduct in the military results in the type of prohibition that Congress has imposed for everybody else.
Retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Korn, professor of law at South Texas College of Law in Houston, thank you so much.
Thank you.